Thank you for the introduction. I'm Faith Fletcher, and I'm from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, and I'm currently a postdoc there. So today I'm going to present to you a qualitative study entitled HIV is not the whole of our relationship, the influence of HIV-positive Black women's sexual partners on their pregnancy intentions in the post-heart era. I would first like to acknowledge my co-authors, Dr. Lucy Anang, Dr. Donna Richter, Dr. Ruth Saunders, and Dr. Richard Saul. I have no relationships to disclose. According to the South Carolina Department of Health and Environmental Control, there are currently 4,540 women estimated to be living with HIV/AIDS. Black women, however, are disproportionately impacted by the HIV/AIDS epidemic in South Carolina. Currently, they represent more than 80% of HIV/AIDS infections. Consistent with the national disparity, the majority of these women diagnosed with HIV are of childbearing age, so this has serious implications for perinatal transmission or mother-to-child transmission of HIV. Currently, there are more than 8 of every 10 infants infected with HIV are born to Black mothers, and this reflects the disparity of Black women who are disproportionately impacted by HIV. So as Black women constitute a larger part of the epidemic, it's important to understand factors that influence their pregnancy intentions so that we can develop interventions to reduce pregnancy and conception-related HIV transmission risk. So given the possibility of transmitting HIV to an infant and/or uninfected sexual partner, many individuals might feel that HIV-positive women would completely delay or avoid childbearing. However, research studies suggest that HIV-positive women of childbearing age continue to express their desires and intentions to bear children. Studies further reveal that HIV-positive women's pregnancy desires differ very little from those of non-infected women. Richter and colleagues contend that women's decisions to become pregnant are neither simple nor univariate. However, research highlighting the contextual level influences that impact women's decisions regarding pregnancy in the context of HIV is yet limited. So one contextual level influence that hasn't been clearly delineated throughout the literature is the influence of women's sexual partners. Currently, little is known about the degree to which the interpersonal partner's role influences women's decisions to become pregnant. And we currently lack public health strategies that focus on supporting women's reproductive goals and reducing conception-related HIV transmission to sexual partners. So we've made advances, substantial advances over the past years in reducing perinatal transmission. Transmission rates are less than 2% now, and less than 200 infants are born HIV positive each year. However, we fail to focus on sexual partners and how that impacts women's decisions in women's attempts to become pregnant. So the purpose of my study was to explore ways in which characteristics of the sexual partnership impact HIV-positive women's intentions to become pregnant. We sought to examine how the serostatus of the sexual partner, the partner's desire to have children, and the nature of the sexual partnership, how do these factors impact women's decisions to become pregnant. So data were collected from June 2009 to July 2010, and we recruited women primarily from 5 clinics and 8 service organizations in the state of South Carolina. We conducted face-to-face in-depth interviews with 42 HIV-positive Black women of childbearing capacity, and these interviews were conducted in a private, mutually convenient location. Some of the locations included the clinics or the AIDS service organizations. Some women had lack of access to transportation, so we actually went to their homes to interview them. Several women who did not allow us to go into their homes, I ended up conducting about 8 interviews in my car because several women hadn't disclosed their status to housemates. So that was something that I didn't expect at all. And one interview was actually conducted in the hospital room because one of the participants was pregnant and she had a few days, she was on bed rest, so she was like, sure, come do my interview. So that's something else that we did. So women received $25 for completing the interviews, and interviews typically did not exceed 1 hour. Interviews were digitally recorded, transcribed, and reviewed, and we used in vivo aid software to analyze the data. 2 research team members served as the coders, and we employed a multi-tiered coding process to analyze the qualitative data. So here's a map, a county map representing the study setting. This is places where we recruited from in addition to conducted interviews in Richland County, Lexington County, Orangeburg County. And at the bottom you can see we have Hampton and Beaufort County. And these two counties are part of South Carolina's Lowcountry region. So now to results. In the interest of time, I'm just going to highlight some of the more important demographic factors that relate directly to my study. So the mean age of my population was 38. The majority of women were single, unemployed, and lived off of less than $10,000 per year. The mean year since diagnosis was 10 years, and it ranged from less than 1 year. A woman was diagnosed 3 months ago when she called me, to someone living with HIV for 29 years. Mean number of children, 2 years. Most of the women were in treatment. Approximately half of the population was attending an urban and the other half a rural clinic. So 93% of the 42 women expressed no intent to become pregnant. And there was one woman actually in the sample who was pregnant during the time of the interview. 45% of the women had sexual partners. Of the 45, 84% reported their sexual partner status as negative, while 15% reported it as unknown. So no women reported partners who were positive. When I asked about the sexual partner's description, 32% described their partner status, described their partner as a husband, 47 as a boyfriend, 11% as a girlfriend, and 11% as a casual male sexual partner. And in terms of their partner's desire to have children, 32% said that the partner's desire to have children, 53% said no. So a summary of my results, these were the themes that emerged through the qualitative research, and I just wanted to give you an overview before we actually get into the next section. So women reported that their pregnancy intentions were minimally influenced by the HIV sterile status of their sexual partners. Additionally, these intentions were minimally influenced by their partner's desire to have children. There was low HIV risk perceptions exhibited by sexual partners with a negative or unknown status, according to women in the study. And women also expressed that their sexual partners lacked willingness to explore alternative methods for conception to reduce HIV transmission risk. So I'm going to present some of the quotations, and in the interest of time, I'll present two per theme. So when I talk to women about how their partner's sterile status influenced their decisions to become pregnant, one woman responded who's 41 with no children diagnosed in 2001. She stated, "I didn't really think about it," and she's referring to her HIV status. "We just see ourselves as a normal couple, which we are normal, but then, you know, because of the HIV and I'm having a child, in our relationship we don't let that be the whole. It's not the whole center of our marriage or in our life." So this was actually one thing that emerged. Women, they sought to obtain, women and men sought to have normal lives, and the status was something that wasn't frequently discussed in their relationship unless it related to doctor's visits or taking medication, but not particularly when it came to having children. Another woman, 49, with seven children, stated, "To be honestly speaking, we don't even talk about it. We really don't. It's like we're a normal couple. We don't talk about it at all. We really don't." So I talked to women. I asked them, how did their partner's desire to have children impact their decisions to become pregnant? And one participant, 35, with five children, stated, "And I keep telling him, there ain't no way. There ain't enough money for me to do it again. Now, if it happens, it happens. I ain't going to sit and plan for it. I ain't going to mark the calendar for the days I'm fertile or something. But if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, then it just doesn't." So the common theme was women and men expressed discordant. Women had discordant views with their sexual partners in terms of having children. Another participant stated, who's 44 with three children, "For the past 2 weeks, my partner was talking to me about having a baby, and I had to really think about that. And I said, well, you know, and I thought about it and laughed about it. I don't know yet, though. I've still got to get myself my priorities in order, and right now my living situation is crazy and I need a job. So that's just where my mind is right now, focusing my goal on getting a job." So something that we didn't expect to find is women expressing that their partners exhibit low HIV risk perceptions. One participant who's 35 with five children diagnosed in 96 stated, "He said God," and she's referring to her partner, "just gave it to me to slow me down because I was living a fast life. I was smoking crack, I was doing a lot of things, and once I found out that I was HIV positive, I gradually slowed down. He said, you've had children and never passed it, so I guess it's just sitting in your body. He was like, I was just given the disease to slow me down, not to destroy me, to make me appreciate what I do have. That's why I said, God ain't going to do that to us, allow him to contract HIV. The truth is, I think he's right. Another participant, 45 with six children, diagnosed in 93, stated a similar perspective. We used rubbers, and there were occasions like when the rubber busted, and I was terrified because I really didn't want him to go through the anxiety of just thinking that he had it. And I continuously told him, baby, you got to go to the doctor. Come on, let's go to the doctor. And he actually kept on refusing. And actually, one time we had sex and the rubber busted and I got pregnant. But down the line, it was no more than like 4 months and I had a miscarriage. But prior to then, I used to tell him all the time. I said, baby, you got to go get tested. He said, I ain't even worried about it. From that point on, I couldn't even stand to be in a relationship with him because he didn't take, and she's referring to her status, serious. So I talked to women about alternative forms of conception in order to reduce HIV transmission risk with their partners. And one woman, 24, with one child, stated, he was like, because I love you and you're my wife and regardless of what, I'm still going to love you and you're still going to be my wife. You're still going to be my baby, my boo. So why can't we just have kids? Why can't we have kids the normal way? I mean, that's how you make kids, the normal way. And I was like, yeah. But are you even worried about becoming infected? He was like, no. He was like, you're the person I'm going to be with the rest of my life. So he wasn't worried. So after that, we ain't never had no more thoughts about it. So this participant talked to her physician, and they talked about using the turkey-baster method, which is essentially using a syringe to conceive. And she responded, my husband like laughed about it, the turkey-baster method. I said, well, that's the best way to keep you from, you know, becoming infected. My husband is something else. He just thinks it's so weird. He said, I just can't get with that turkey baster thing. So now to my discussion. Generally, there is a minimal interpersonal partner influence on women's decisions to become pregnant. Women discussed other reasons, financial reasons, other contextual factors, aside from their partner's influence that impacted their desires to have children. As I stated, the majority of the women in the sample had no intentions to become pregnant. There was also a low threat of HIV transmission exhibited by women and their sexual partners generally. And something that we thought about with this population being in treatment, 98% of the population was in treatment. It's possible that their confidence and heart, women frequently stated, my numbers are good, my CD4 count is good, my viral load is good, and they expressed that it's a possibility that they wouldn't transmit to their partners. So maybe this, the construct of optimism is something that we should explore in the future, which has been shown in research studies to lead to HIV complacency, which is minimizing, discrediting the threat of HIV. And also alternative methods for conception. Something that was really pervasive throughout our study was women talked frequently about micro and macro level stigmatization. And it's possible that using other ways, any other way than the natural way of conception for women and their partners would feel like further stigmatizing them or reminding them of their HIV status. And finally, 15% of women's partners 15% of women reported their partner status was unknown. So this, you know, can possibly be research studies. Just in any population, there's a communication deficit, obviously, with partners, women and their partners. Additionally, it minimizes the threat of HIV or the social and medical implications of transmitting HIV. So some implications can possibly include national policy enforcing the implementation of preconception counseling to provide women and their sexual partners opportunities to discuss pregnancy and conception-related transmission risk, or to even discuss family planning generally. Education for service providers which support women's reproductive autonomy. Some women mentioned that their healthcare providers discourage them from becoming pregnant, but in this post-heart era, we don't want to discourage women. We want to provide them with informed decision-making opportunities. Finally, increasing availability and accessibility to integrated HIV care and reproductive services, again, is another opportunity to provide women with information to make the best decisions for their infants and their sexual partners. And interventions to support couples' reproductive goals employing multi-level strategies are also critical. So implications for the future. We're interested in looking, the next steps include examining the behaviors, attitudes, and perceptions of men in several discordant partnerships with HIV-positive women employing a quantitative study. Examining the behaviors, attitudes, and perceptions of women in these relationships. We would like to explore men's risk perceptions, sexual practices, desires for pregnancy, and their knowledge of and willingness to utilize alternative options for conception. And these are men who are negative. And finally, examining the interrelationship between heart optimism and perceptions of HIV transmission risk to infants and partners is a very important area of inquiry as well. So there are obviously some limitations. 42 HIV-positive women living in South Carolina who were in treatment, so there's actually a lack of generalizability that can exist for populations outside. My bias as a researcher and the impact, the influence that I may have had on research participants, social desirability. But there are some strengths. We focused on a disadvantaged population in South Carolina and on micro and macro level factors influencing intentions. And looking at the intimate influence of the male partner can definitely serve as a springboard to larger studies, looking at some of these constructs that have been revealed in the qualitative part. And just spending time with 42 women over a year, we gained insightful information that is beyond the scope of the study. As I mentioned, there's a lot of information that emerged about stigma, and this is something that we didn't initially think we would have so much data on. So I would like to acknowledge the University of South Carolina Department of Health Promotion, Education, and Behavior, the CDC for funding my dissertation research, thanks. Recruitment sites, and of course the women in the study, I've learned so much from them, and you know they inspire me to continue to do this work. Thank you.